Hello and welcome to Book Talk Extra. I'm Paul Gallagher. Having featured James Robertson's book And the Land Lay Still on the most recent Book Talk podcast, we were interested to hear about how James Robertson had gone about writing the book and researching and putting it together. And we think that you would probably be interested to hear about that too. So James generously agreed to give us some of his time and tell us a bit about the process of writing And the Land Lay Still. Here's what he had to say.
When I started thinking about writing And the Land Lay Still, I was really going back to my own experiences in my 20s and 30s of being involved in the campaign for a Scottish Parliament in the 1980s and 90s. And while I was involved in all of that, I kind of knew, I was just beginning to get things published, poems and short stories and things, and I knew that the stuff I was living through was interesting and exciting, and that actually at some point that stuff could be told through fiction. And I thought that at some point I would come back to that. But it wasn't until 2006 that I began to think about how I would tell that story through a novel. And as soon as I started thinking about that, how would I tell that political story, I realised that just talking about the 1980s and 90s wasn't going to be enough. I was going to have to go back much further than that. And I ended up going back to the period just after the Second World War. It seemed to me I had to go back that far in order to provide a context for this story. So I ended up going back to, as I say, roughly 1950 and coming forward. I was going to originally finish the book with the arrival of the Parliament, the return of the Parliament in 1999. But then, for various reasons, I took it on a few years beyond that. And the most difficult thing, right from the outset, was that was a big story. It covered a lot of period, a big time scale, and there were also going to be a lot of different elements of telling that story, because it was about change, fundamentally. The story was about change. It was about how Scotland had gone from how it was in 1950 to how it was in roughly the year 2000, 2005. And there'd been so much change in that period: political change, social change, cultural change, the way that people went to work. You know, instead of, you know, in the 50s and 60s, you know, the factory sirens would sound and thousands of people would pour out of the factory gates. We don't go to work in that way anymore. The role of women has changed so massively. Our attitudes towards sex and sexuality and the decline of the sort of power of religion and religious organisations, all of these things have moved on. And, of course, the political story of Scotland has been quite dramatic in that period too. So the structural problem for me was, how do I cram all of that into a book without it reading like a history lesson? And I decided that the best way was to tell various individual fictional stories spread out over that period, and for those stories to begin to become interlinked. And gradually, I think I had just started thinking about characters who I thought would be interesting characters. And there was the storytelling character who ends up being Jean Barber, and there was the sort of political activist character who ends up being Michael Pendreath, the man whose story is kind of seems to kick the thing off. And then there were the two older characters, Jack Gordon and his pal Don Lenny, who kind of almost represent the sort of nationalist inclinations of Scottish politics as opposed to the Labour inclinations of Scottish politics, and they're pals, but they go their different ways. And gradually I kind of found these characters beginning to evolve, you know, for a lot of writing and rewriting and trying out different things about them. I mean, with the Mike Pendreath character, I didn't realise he was gay for a long time. And then when I did realise that I hadn't addressed that issue of his sexuality, once I'd done that, I thought, oh, now he makes sense and I can fit him into the context of the wider story. And then the other big character, well, there were two other big characters, I suppose. One was Ellen Imlach, who's this woman who becomes a journalist, she was important because I wanted to try and have a strong female character in the book. And then there was this guy, Peter Bond, who's a novel within the novel. He's the character who is the sort of MI5 operative who goes wrong because he can't handle drink and so on. And that seemed to me to be an undercurrent in the story as well, that there was this kind of clandestine, shadowy stuff going on in the, underneath the rest of the story. So all of these factors were there, and really what I had to do was find a way of keeping those, juggling a whole lot of balls and keeping them up in the air at the same time. So I had a huge chart that I put up on my wall with the years and the dates running along one axis and the list of characters down the other axis, and in the sort of grid of that axis, I put in various key moments, political moments like general elections or by-elections or whatever, but also key things that happened, key events like the Upper Clyde shipbuilders working, or big football games, or the World Cup in 1978. All of these things had to be in there in some form or other. And gradually this grid began to fill up with all these real events and these fictional events. And so it was like meshing together history and fiction, and building this big panoramic picture of Scotland over 50 or 60 years. So this was really quite a long process to get the fiction and the history, as it were, into a state that I felt that it would stand up as a novel. And it was also, of course, I realised it was going to be a very long novel too. So although I'd been thinking about this for quite a long time, several years, I didn't really start putting this together until early 2006. And the whole thing took me 4 years. I wasn't just doing this, I was doing other things as well, but from start to finish, really, the process was 4 years, and I had a lot of false starts. I mean, I got, after about 2 years in, I think I had roughly worked out the structure in terms of, I knew that there was going to be several sections to the book, and I knew I was going to start with one character's story and then go back to another's, and that it wasn't going to be told quite chronologically, that there was going to be an opening section that would start near the end of the time scale of the book, and then I'd be going back in time and then coming forward to join up those things. It was a bit, the way that I always think about this when you're writing a big thing like this is it's a bit like sort of setting off to swim across a loch, and you can't see the other side and there's a mist, but you just have to keep going, and after a while you're out in the middle of the loch and you can't see the shore that you left, and you can't see the one you're heading for, but you have to keep going, which is a big act of faith, is it, when you're writing a novel. You have to believe that actually you will get to the other side, and it's not until you begin to see the end in sight, as it were, that you can get a sense of what the structure of the book really is. So having done a sort of rough draft, which didn't actually include all the elements of the book, that probably took me 2.5 years to get to that stage. I then realised that there were other things that I had to put in the book. I had to go back and start again. I'd been experimenting with, is this going to be told in the first person by one character? What tense is some of the parts of the novel going to be told in? Is it different voices, or is it the same narrative voice that's overarching the whole thing? All of these things were trial and error, really. Eventually, I got to a place where I knew I had a big book. In fact, it was so big that my agent said, this is really 3 books. but the difficulty then was it possible to divide it into 3 books? And I didn't think it was. I felt that it had to be contained within one volume. It was even longer than it is. It was about 100 pages longer than it is, but I took quite a lot out, which actually improved the book because it had got quite baggy. I think the temptation with something like this is you could go on adding things to this kind of story forever. So I was pretty ruthless in editing it down again. What I was aiming for, and what I hope has been achieved, is to create a kind of big panoramic novel that the reader who dives in at the front of the novel, will sometimes feel perhaps that they're submerged and drowning a bit in it. But if they get through it and they get to the end, I hope that they come out with a sense that they have that they have been through that whole period of 50, 60 years, and that they kind of have a sense of how the country has changed in that period. It's very interesting when you do finish a big, big project like this. The first feeling was relief. The second feeling was I was pretty tired. Then I thought, well, am I ever going to write something as big as that again? You know, is that the sort of biggest thing that I'll ever attempt to do? And then you have to give yourself a slap and say, well, you know, the great 19th century writers churned out books this size regularly. They didn't need their word processors. So, you know, come on, get a grip. Dickens and Trollope and all these other characters could do these books on a regular basis. And I really admired that. And that's one of the sort of things I was trying to do. I was trying to emulate some of those great 19th century novels. But basically, having done that, no, I felt I couldn't, I didn't want to go in and do another big book like that. I wanted to actually almost go to the other extreme and write something that was much more focused and tight and precise. And perhaps also, when you write something of this size, you can't dig as deep down into the characters as perhaps you would otherwise do, because you've got so many. I had so many characters in this book, and so the novel is kind of more like a sort of social political novel. It doesn't get right down inside the characters in the way that that a more intimate novel might. So, in fact, the novel that I've just completed, which is coming out later on this year, called The Professor of Truth, is in that sense a completely different book. It's much more focused on one or two individuals and their sort of inner lives as opposed to their outside lives, although that's slightly misleading in terms of what the book is about. But I don't know when or whether I'll go back to trying to do something on this scale again. I'd like to think I would, but I certainly wouldn't want to have to do this every time.
That was James Robertson talking about writing and The Land Lay Still. And if you haven't listened to the Book Talk episode on which we discuss reading and The Land Lay Still, you can find it in iTunes or on the Scottish Book Trust website, scottishbooktrust.com. Look out for the next editions of the Scottish Book Trust reading podcasts, Bookmarked and Book Talk, in iTunes and on the Scottish Book Trust website soon.